Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Jimmy Rocks here. Hey, before we start the show today, I just wanted to give a quick, some information. Today's episode, my featured guest is filmmaker Gavin Michael Booth, and man, he's phenomenal. And his new movie, Last Call's phenomenal. I don't remember during the episode if we mentioned the website. I got so excited talking to him and whatnot about the film and everything that I think I might have forgotten to mention the website and social media and whatnot. Anyhow, you can find information about the film Last Call at their official website, www.lastcallonetake.com. Again, that's www.lastcallonetake.com. And one is written out, O-N-E. It's not the number. Also, additionally, on Facebook and Twitter, you can find the Last Call pages on Facebook and Twitter. They're both at the at symbol Last Call One Take. So and that's for Facebook and Twitter. Again, indie film man, any help you can give in liking and sharing, and you know, after you see the movie, you know, let people know what you thought of it and whatnot. Very, very cool. Okay, without further ado, here's today's episode with filmmaker Gavin Michael Booth. Check it out. Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I'm glad you did. Hey, before we start today, I just want to thank everybody. Boy, did I get a whole bunch of, what do they call them now? DMs and emails and tweets and all kinds of stuff. Yesterday, for some reason, our host servers, they were supposed to start some maintenance last night, and they started it early. And, our show from yesterday didn't get posted until this morning. It took them all night to get it done, but they I don't know, we're doing technical stuff that I have no idea about. But I apologize to everybody because everybody kind of freaked out. They're like, oh, man, what's going on? What's happening? And it was nothing exciting. It was nothing exciting. They just started a little early, and I missed the opportunity to upload the show once we had done it. Until this morning. So it is available. It's out there everywhere. It was real fun. And I think today's show is going to be a lot of fun too. I am very, very excited. I'm really excited. As many of you know, I as a painter, I guess I can get a little artsy fartsy once in a while. And today we have a guest who is a fantastic filmmaker, writer, director of a movie that just blew me away. I don't want you to go, oh, it's one of those highbrow artsy fart. No, this is a drama. But it's very cool the way it's done. And it's artistic in its coolness. And I just want to talk to him about it. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Mr. Gavin Michael Booth, director of the film Last Call. Gavin, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm blown away. I was blown away by your film. I watched this a week or so, well, it was a couple days ago, actually, in the evening. And what a cool, cool movie, man. This is awesome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you dig it.
Yeah, I totally do. I didn't know if you were going to do – I've seen split-screen type stuff. You know, like Quentin Tarantino will sometimes do that, kind of emulate like a comic book or whatnot, but it's real brief.
Yep.
And quick and whatnot. Number one, let me just start by saying, because I'm getting ahead of myself, let me start by saying I am not in the movie business. Everybody knows I'm a painter by trade. I paint pictures of people for a living, but I'm a cinephile, meaning that I'm a civilian that loves movies. I'm that guy, you know, that has the backyard theater and, you know, makes my friends watch French movies and stuff, and they usually groan, but they do. Anyway, I approached this, and I was like, just number one, my mind is blown at the concept of filmmaking. That you guys can, because it's such a ginormous project. I couldn't even imagine doing this. And I guess, Gavin, you said, well, you know, I'm going to tie one arm behind my back. Not only am I going to do it, I'm going to do it in one take. Oh, and that's not enough for you? Well, it's kind of two movies shot in one take that intersect. The story goes into both. I mean, were you drunk when you came up with the idea? I mean, it works fantastic, but just the idea of doing it, you know?
I have been obsessed with single take format for a while. I've done a good dozen single take music videos. I've done 2 20-minute short films that were single takes. One of them was the world's first live movie that we did with Blumhouse. We did an experimental short film at Halloween that was actually broadcast live, so we only had one take to get it right. And then I had a four-screen split screen movie that dealt with a shooting in a high school, kind of like a Columbine type story, that for years would get picked up by a company and then dropped because of what would happen in the U.S. constantly with mass shootings. It would always scare an investor away or one party involved in making the film. But we, so David, who acts in the film as Scott, came to me one day. He had acted in one of my single take music videos. We've been friends for a while. We're trying to find a project to work on. And he had this core idea of a man calling a suicide hotline, and that maybe it would be best presented in real time because then the tension is there of never knowing what's going to happen. And if we showed it in split screen, you could see both sides of that phone call at the same time, which is a technique, like, it's lifted from, like, great movies like Annie Hall. The Woody Allen movie has some wonderful split screen things. And, you know, the minute he pitched it to me, I was like, this is a great idea, and we sort of started developing it immediately. We ended up changing it to be, you know, so just so your audience knows, the core concept is simple concept. Man calls a suicide hotline, but he's misdialed by one digit, gets connected with a random stranger, and the stranger on the other end of the phone decides to stay on the phone and try to, you know, change the course of what this man's decision will be. And we're watching it in real time. So we actually had two camera crews in two different parts of the city at the same time, filming simultaneously, and the actors were actually acting live over the telephone.
Wow. Well, it's the actor, and I got to say, not only was the filming of this and the concept phenomenal, the acting, both actors, I mean, the character development and whatnot, it was just phenomenal. Beth, the female character in this, you know, I've known her, not that actress, of course, but people like that, you know, working a couple jobs, a single, trying to get it together, the world's against them, it seems, you know. And David, too, I've known that cat, you know, where choices have been made and dark rooms are entered, you know. It's crazy. Have either of you guys worked at a suicide line or something like that before? Because, I mean, I believed it. I got drawn into this, man. Just from a writing background?
No. So, we definitely did a lot of research. We reached out to some mental health organizations. You know, we wanted to tell the film honestly. I don't like when suicide's used as sort of like a gimmick in a movie or just a plot point. Like, I really enjoyed movies like A Star Is Born, but, you know, spoiler alert, if people haven't seen it, when it gets to the suicide scene, it just feels like it's there to have the next dramatic beat in this man's life. It didn't really feel to be a thing that was mental health wasn't seemed to be a thing that was afflicting him the whole time. Famously 13 Reasons Why that overly romanticized their suicide scene and ultimately had it removed from the series after some protests. So David is really good friends with actress Katie Featherstone, who is from the Paranormal Activity movies, and she volunteers at a crisis center. Had just completed her training. That's part of what triggered the idea for David. And she became a very valuable resource in, like, talking. So, and that's part of, like, knowing what she does as a volunteer crisis worker. That's part of what made us change it to a stranger, because we didn't want to take away from or wrongly characterize the way that an actual crisis worker would handle the call. And just for dramatic purposes, it became more interesting. It almost puts us in Beth's shoes that she's a character that could be any one of us receiving that call and not knowing any protocols or having any training from a suicide hotline. Like, how would we handle that? How would we rise to the occasion if we were to get that call?
Right. It's powerful stuff, man. Powerful stuff. And, you know, I'm sure you have known. I mean, I don't know, but I'm sure. It seems if you're in the entertainment business, we've all, I think just if you're a human being in the modern world, suicide has affected, you know, somebody we've known, you know, maybe one or twice removed. But I've known a lot of people who have benefited from those lines, you know, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people I know that I don't know that have benefited from that fund, if you know what I mean, that I don't even know anything that were there. And so I'm glad they're out there. It's
David and Sarah, you know, the actress in the film and myself, we all have personal stories with like suicide amongst our family and friends. So it's definitely sensitive to everyone involved, even people on the crew that had told us stories of family and friends. And, you know, I've always known suicide is a thing, but until making this movie, I was a little bit ignorant to kind of like the numbers. And now that I read more and more about like the number of, you know, U.S. soldiers that die by suicide every year, and it's staggering. Like, I thought the number was like, wait, this is saying like annually, but it's like, no, daily or weekly numbers are staggering.
I'm telling you, man.
Interesting time where I feel like we're only in an awakening in the last 5 years or so, really openly talking about mental health. And it is so great to see so many, you know, national days and months dedicated to the topic. You know, in Canada, where I grew up, they had Bell, the phone company had Bell Let's Talk Day, and, you know, schools doing fundraisers. And there's all these great mental health organizations like, you know, Art with Impact, where they're promoting films and poetry and just all kinds of art that deals with mental health. It's just, there really is a lot of great causes and resources. And I also think social media, you know, social media can be terrible when it comes to politics and racism and fighting.
Right.
But I think that's always what's in the news and what's highlighted. But really, social media has given people so many more outlets to find out where they can reach out if they need to talk to somebody or find support groups. And you know, I think there's, for every bad thing with technology, there's always the greater side of it. So it is nice to think that there are way more resources available for people.
Oh, absolutely. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Bellbay Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com. to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and, of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
It happened in my family. I had a younger sister who, was going through her teenage stuff, and this was before social media and before everybody had computers at home, really. And, I'll tell you a really insidious thing about it, too, that a lot of people, I don't hear it come up a lot, is the family. After, I mean, my parents, for a decade, the wind was taken out of their sail, you know? It just knocked them down for a good 10 years. And, it affects, it's a big thing. And anybody listening, you know, hey, if you're in a bad place or whatnot, like we're talking about all this stuff, you know, talk to somebody, call one of these numbers, you know, call anybody, you know, people there to help, you know, everybody wants to help. Nobody wants to, I'd rather have a conversation with somebody than go to a funeral. I mean, I know that sounds terrible and trite, and I don't mean for it to, but it's very true, you know.
I had a good friend who's an actor who committed suicide. It really, you know, it really took me by surprise because we had not fallen out of touch entirely, but just didn't talk as closely and just think. I would have never, and that's the thing, you never see it coming. You never know what kind of pain somebody's in unless they're willing to reach out and talk. And, you know, we didn't make Last Call to be a message. You know, we made the movie that we wanted to make, but because I feel like we had done our research properly and consulted, we've actually been able
to. It was respectful.
We had our world premiere in Canada, and we worked with Canadian Mental Health Association, and we're able to raise money for them through our premiere. And right now the film is finishing a week run theatrical in Canada, and all ticket money
That's
for the
awesome.
Week. The theater owners, us as the producers, our distributor, Mutiny Pictures, are not taking a penny, and all of the money is going to Canadian Mental
wow.
Health. And we have some other things coming up that are exciting, where if the movie can be used as a – now it's been vetted by the mental health community and some like leading psychologists – I feel comfortable. I wouldn't have wanted to put it out into the world and say, this film has a message, and then actually be a film that could be a trigger or something for people. So
it's
incredibly rewarding to have made the movie that we wanted, but then know that it can also speak to people. We've had wonderful, engaging Q&As all over the world at film festivals where audiences that have it's really impacted them want to talk to David and Sarah and I afterwards. And we end up sometimes talking for hours in the lobby or at a bar afterwards with folks. And it's been really,
awesome.
At first, to be honest, like it made me uncomfortable because like these strangers are just bearing their deepest, darkest secrets and pass with mental health to me. And that made me very uncomfortable. But, as it happened more and more, just kind of eased into it and realized like it's that simple sometimes talking to a stranger. I mean, that's what the whole movie is about.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to anybody, you know, like just sometimes the kindness of a stranger, you never know, like if somebody's in front of you, like in a lineup at a Starbucks or something, it's frustrating to have it. You don't know what they're going through. So you don't have to write them off or think of them as like, you know, an a-hole instantly or whatever. Like maybe just a smile or an offer of assistance would change somebody's outlook entirely.
Absolutely.
So the movie, the experience of making the movie has made me much more self-aware of just being a little kinder and a little more gentle with strangers and just, you know, never really realizing what, and checking in with friends more often, you know, because we all get so busy in our own lives, but you never realize just picking up the phone and calling somebody, you know, not necessarily saying, I think this person's in a bad state, but I mean, I think we all just want a little more friendship and conversation in our life.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me, Gavin, that you're from Canada. Being kind, like I said, I grew up, we were talking before the show started here off mic. I grew up on one side of the dirty side of the river. You grew up on the nicer side. It always amazed me growing up. Man, you crossed that Ambassador Bridge. I'm talking about Windsor and Detroit, listeners. But yeah, on the Detroit side, it's just, you know, there's brown snow and the wind. You, at least it was when I grew up. I haven't been there in 20 years. That might have changed. Let's be fair.
Detroit?
Yeah,
Detroit,
you cross the Ambassador Bridge or go through the tunnel. Whoa, it was like going to paradise or something. It was amazing.
Downtown Detroit has had a major shift in the last 10 years. It's beautiful. And in the summer, there's outdoor volleyball courts,
awesome.
Like outdoor beach bars. And, you know, some big corporations have come in and built their headquarters there. It's got to be a real renovation. It's really something. There's a couple real estate development groups that have come in and, made
That's
some
awesome.
Major shifts. It's really fun to see. And in some ways, Windsor's starting to have a homeless problem and a drug addict, an opioid crisis problem. Like in some ways, it's almost flipped where I feel safer walking around downtown Detroit than downtown Windsor, which is bizarre because you and I both, you know, growing up in the area, everything you were just saying was very true, you know, 20, 30 years ago,
sure. Absolutely. I can't believe there's no burning cars. People laugh when I think it's so funny. Because I've lived all over the place. I've lived in Southern California and went to school in Boston and places. But Detroit's always home. You know, it's where you cut your teeth. And people always ask me. You know, they're like, "Well, was it really bad gangs?" And I said, "Well, you know, when I grew up, I don't remember any gangs. People for a gang to operate, people have to get along. You know, enough to do something. There were like gangs of one, maybe two. Nobody got along enough to form any organization like that. I'm glad to hear that makes my day. I'm glad to hear that things have changed a bit. I hope Windsor comes along too. It's hard for me to even wrap my head around that because, like I said, Canada's Windsor was, man, that was the place to go.
Everybody
back in the day.
Well, but Detroit really, like when you watch The Crow and it's Devil's Night with people setting fires everywhere, literally Devil's Night, October 30th in Detroit.
Yeah.
There were neighborhood watch
Very
programs
true.
To stop things. Like when you see, like, you know, unfortunately right now, the cities in America that are like storefronts are being burned. That was just every Halloween in Detroit for years, you know, like what happened in The Crow is not far off from like the 80s in Detroit.
No, it was very, very true. Very true. It was a crazy time, man. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Right now, we all might feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone with smaller social circles, feelings of loneliness and isolation can feel overwhelming. But there's something we can all do to help. Connect with your older loved one virtually and have the conversation of a lifetime with StoryCorps Connect. Anyone can conduct an interview, and every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history. Connect, honor, share at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Well, speaking of crazy things, so, you know, Gavin decides to make this film that we've been talking about, Last Call. No, originally this had a different name, but as I've been doing the show here for the past 1,000 episodes, I've kind of learned a couple things that working titles and stuff can change. but the name of this is Last Call, which I think is very apropos, you know, for the film. And I know you said you've done it, but Gavin, this is like shooting two movies at the same time. In one take, man. That's zany, you know. That's crazy.
It was,
I'm blown away
it was
by
something.
It.
You know, we made the film on a fraction of a Hollywood budget. I'm sure an Avengers movie catering budget doesn't even cost more than what we spent in a day. So we only had 10 days of rehearsal for all performance and tech rehearsal, and only 4 days to actually shoot the movie and get it right. You said we had a different title. Where do you hear that from? Because
I saw something. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm probably wrong on that. I thought I saw something where one take or something.
There's something about how it was called, like "Call Me If You Can" or something that's listed on IMDb. But we've been trying to figure out where that. Like, somebody posted that on there because we have never.
I gotcha.
Never called the film that, so I don't know. But, you know, God bless the internet and Wikipedia and things where anybody can post anything. You know?
I'm telling you, you would. I've had both false good things and bad things posted about me.
It just means you're doing something right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I really dug this film in that, you know, let me ask you this. Because I was curious, didn't know from a directorial standpoint, like I know anything about this, but I was curious, since you're doing this in one take, it's almost like a theatrical, like a theater. Have you directed plays and things like that?
I have never directed a play,
really?
Which is odd with this. But yeah, because it was definitely done exactly what you're saying. We would, you know, because any movie, whether you're shooting a 30-second shot or a 3-minute shot, you rehearse with the actors, you know, you get the camera, the lighting, everything set, and then you say action. And then when the shot's over, you say cut, and then you make adjustments. And we were just doing that on a much larger scale, similar to like what a full dress rehearsal at a theater would be, where you're not stopping and starting the actors anymore. You would let them run all the way through it and then give notes and direction at the end and then go again and go again. So what we would do, we had the advantage of – I was also operating the camera on one side of this. So I was actively involved in that sense. So we would, you know, yell action. Both sides of the story would play out entirely. We would film all of our rehearsals even. And then, like, on lunch breaks and after wrapping each day's rehearsal or shooting, we were able to put together a rough version in the edit program and watch through as a team. And sort of the same way that, like, a sports team would use a game tape to go back and, like, okay, look, you were open here, so we got to close that gap for next time. You know, I could talk with the lighting team and say, that light's a little too bright there. We've got to tone that down. Oh, look, I think you can see a cord sticking out of the ceiling here for a light. Look, cameraman, you're reflecting in the glass over there, so make sure you turn the camera this way next time. And then give the actor notes, and then we would go again and again. And again, it was obviously, if we had more money and had more time to rehearse, that would have been great. You know, maybe there's a better version of the movie out there somewhere, but there's also something about really scrappy productions with just the right people where everybody's firing on all pistons and just wants to do their best job. And sometimes the lack of extra preparation ends up making the project better. And I think that's very true of this film, where if we had spent more time, maybe we would have lost some of the sort of kinetic energy. Maybe we would have lost some of the realism if the actors got too comfortable or too used to just saying the same thing over and over again. But, I'm very, very proud of the film we made. And, like, you know, you can overthink, especially in one take, where, like, we could have done this and this and this different. But part of the idea of doing a real-time film is that there are going to be those organic moments that you couldn't have scripted or planned on. And that's, you know, that was the whole point of using this technique, was to put the audience in Beth's shoes, where you're hanging on every word that she says. You're wondering what the outcome's going to be. There's just a constant tension because the audience is never giving a relief. You know, obviously there's larger scale movies like 1917 and Birdman and things that have used this technique. And those work very well in all scenarios. But I really think a lot of people use the word gimmick when they talk about one take, but I think it can't, like, there's gimmicky music that are one take. They're just super fun to watch. But I think in terms of narrative film, generally, the filmmakers are using this not as a gimmick, but because it adds something. You know, if we had made Last Call with traditional cutting back and forth between the two parts, I just don't think it would be the same movie. I feel it was the right technique for the right story at the right time.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love this subtle change of the split screen from a horizontal split to a vertical split, like during dialogue and whatnot. That's cool, man. That worked real well, I thought. I liked that a lot. I was impressed. It's very, very cool. I should let people know, too, we have on our show page links to the website, lastcalluptake.com, also the Facebook, Twitter, IMDb page. All the links are there. I suggest you, go and like and share those various pages and whatnot. Gavin, now I looked at your IMDb page and, you've been doing, ladies and gentlemen, this is Gavin's first. No, it's really not. He's been at this a long time. and a wide assortment of stuff. Let me ask you, when you were growing up in Windsor, when you were a young lad, did you know that filmmaking was it? Were you like the film kid that everybody knew? Were you aware that filmmaking was what you needed to be doing?
I wanted to be a writer, creative writer. I was always writing short stories and entering little contests and things in elementary school. And then around seventh or eighth grade, my local like video rental shop started renting a camcorder. So like families could take it on vacation or throw birthday parties or whatever. And a good friend of mine, Troy Schwager, who I've actually, I'll have to point out that he's now mentioned in infamy on this radio show. He and I used to rent the camera almost every single weekend. And his older brother had a camera for a while. And then eventually I saved up my paper route money and bought a VHS camera, but we were running around making, really silly like parodies of things like Indiana Jones and the Lost Remote Control or like Friday the 13th, Part 7, or we had this like Rambo style thing where it was like my friend Troy playing like the Rambo character because his brother had this amazing like bow and arrow sets, and so we were doing like Bye Bye Doggy where it's him versus this stuffed animal that was causing all this trouble. Mostly it was excuses to set things on fire and shoot things with a bow and arrow. And it was just so much fun. And that was, it was just very organic where like, then I would have to like, okay, well that sucks when we don't write a script. So let's write a little 2-page script. Then let's go into the woods with our friends and film things. And then when I entered high school, I was very fortunate to have a teacher, Mr. Herrick. He's passed away now, but Mr. Herrick just let me run wild in the school. Like don't go to English class today. Here's the excuse why you don't have to be in English class. Go out and film something for me. Like, I need you to put together this promo video for the school. Or, he was incredibly encouraging, would let me stay after hours, worked out a deal with the janitors that stayed at the school till midnight, that I could be in the editing room every night till midnight. My parents were cool with that. Like, it was I just sort of lived in the high school editing suite. And then by the time high school was done, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't know how I was going to get there. Like, I always describe it in Star Wars terms of that quote of when Luke is talking about Tatooine, he says, well, if there's a bright center of the universe, then you're on the planet that is furthest from. And that's what Windsor to L.A., where I live now, felt like. If there's a bright center of the Hollywood universe, you're in the city that is furthest from. But I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to tell stories, and there was nothing else. I've tried to have other jobs, and it's just, I can't do it. It's just been this burning desire forever, and fortunately started to meet the people that would make that possible. And I fumbled in the dark for a long time of making a couple very, like, but for my era, everybody saw Kevin Smith's Clerks or Rodriguez's El Mariachi and just went, oh, man, I can put $25,000 on a credit card, or I can raise some money from friends and family and go make a movie. And then you just put it in Sundance, and then that's it.
You know.
I know his name is Howard now, but Harvey Weinstein will see it and give you a $1 million deal, and then you're on the cover of USA Today, and it's that simple. And then you make that $25,000 movie, and you realize you made a less than great movie. Yeah. It's not getting into Sundance, and you'll be lucky if anyone outside of your mother and father ever watches. But the trick there is learn. What I learned best is learn by failing and learn by doing. Just try to get a little better at it with each outing, and eventually, maybe I moved to Toronto way late in the game. But by doing that, it opened up the opportunity to meet serious distributors, serious financiers and things for films, and get a quote unquote real movie off the ground. But at the same time, I used to sneak into concerts in Detroit with a fake media pass. And that's how I met so many bands and started doing music videos and tour videos for bands. So that was, a lot of the music videos that I do are short films, essentially. The artist isn't in the video. It's just like storytelling,
right,
without dialogue.
Those are my
favorite. That was a really good way. That was a really good way for me to build up like my narrative directing and storytelling skills.
Oh, that's awesome, man. As a child of the 80s, I got to tell you, man, I grew up with music videos. I thought music videos was, you know, a total viable art form, you know, and I'll tell you, Gavin, you would have appreciated this. I had the two VHS machines, like, piggybacked together, and instead of making people mix cassette tapes, I would make them mix videotapes, you know? I was
love
like,
it.
Oh, you gotta
love
watch
it. I would have been your best friend. Yeah, I remember sitting in front of, like, MTV and Much Music in Canada, just, like, waiting to hit record, you know, when a video that I wanted.
Right.
Because it'd be, like, for me, like, my favorite music video of all time is Pearl Jam's Jeremy. And just, like, waiting for things like that to come so I could get it on tape and then try to, like, because it had so many fast cuts and Bible quotes and things in it, and I always wanted to try to, like, go through it frame by frame. And I still direct a lot of music videos, and it's such a wonderful art form. And I love that. I mean, the budgets have crashed significantly since back in the day, but it's a fun challenge. And as an independent filmmaker that's used to working in low budget, music videos have been also my greatest training ground as a producer of how to do a lot more, how to keep high production value, how to tell a compelling story without the money. And that has definitely benefited, like, going into a project like Last Call, where if people knew the budget, they'd be shocked, because you can buy semi-decent cars for more than what Last Call
wow.
cost. So it works. Everything's very, like, if I look back, which I rarely do, but the few times I look back, I can definitely see the link of this project led to this skill set, led to this project, learned to saving money, doing this, that led to a film like Last Call.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another. A friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierox.us.
But it, last call, I want to let people know. Last call, that it, and Gavin, I want to let you know. I mean, I don't know what the budget for this was, but it doesn't look like it, you know, like this was shot in a garage or something like that. I mean, this looks, you know, I don't know anything about film. You know, I just, I know what I see, and it looks, this looks like, you know, I don't know, big cameras on dollies, on those rails and stuff were used, you know. You had to have a megaphone.
We were very lucky. We had some amazing parts. So, you know, there was our cash budget, but the real trick to independent filmmaking is then to pull in all the favors, where the locations were provided to us at no cost, which was wonderful. Mm. You know, like my home city, Windsor, Ontario, came out to support. St. Clair College is the location where Beth is the night janitor at, graciously partnered with us to let us do that. Like our score was also recorded in a single take, and we used the Chrysler Theater, which is also owned by St. Clair College, and they came out to support so we could do a day where school kids could come in and listen to the music score being recorded live in a single take. The city has just been amazing, where like if you added in all what those rental costs would have been, plus the company Red that makes like the probably the most popular cinema camera for shooting movies on, you know, partnered with us because they were really interested in us doing this super long take, and we could actually do some bench tests for their camera performance that other people weren't using the camera in that way. And we just had some wonderful partnerships, a company called Zacuto that makes shoulder rigs and eyepieces for the camera were really on board to help. Tilta, who makes focus wheels. And like it was just a wonderful collaboration between local restaurants that would donate the food. So the cash that we had was spent specifically to be on screen versus on all the sort of frivolous spending that many movies would take. So it is a much more expensive movie outside of its budget. And that's the real trick to independent filmmaking, is keeping your budget low but not losing the production value, as they call it, you know, so that it will still look. And I actually anticipated the movie to look less detailed and less rich than it did, because we were planning on using – also, you know, we're carrying those cameras on our shoulders for the duration of the entire take. So the 60-pound Red Cam rig isn't the ideal. Something like a DSLR camera, like a small Canon or Sony, would be the ideal for the weight situation. But, you know, that definitely helped enrich it. And then our cinematographer, Seth Wesselestes, and our gaffer, Doug Cunningham, like, worked so hard to craft really detailed and gorgeous lighting scenarios and still have some contrast and shadows and the hallways at the school and making Scott's apartment like feel dim that he's lived there in this sort of solitude for a long time, but still make it beautiful. So the movie actually visually came out a lot more stunning than I had anticipated going in, knowing our budget. And that's just, you know, the testament is like buying a great camera and a great lens doesn't make you a great photographer. It's the eye of the person using it. It's the lighting. It's the understanding of how to maximize that tool, because there are people who can take brilliant photos with an iPhone, and there are people that can take brilliant photos with a $15,000 camera and lens. And it really just comes down to how creative you are with the tools you use. And that's one of the most freeing things with independent film right now, is everyone has access to the same tools. You know, Steven Soderbergh shot High Flying Bird on an iPhone, literally an iPhone with no bells and whistles. And it looks, you know, I can tell the difference because I know what I'm looking for, but it's a marginal difference now, where if you have a great script and great actors, everything else is sort of forgivable in indie film. It can look a little more crude. It can sound a little more crude. Maybe the score was done with a synthesizer on a keyboard because you couldn't afford, you know, string musicians or whatever. But if the story is there and the acting is there, you have a movie. Everything else can only get better, but that crudeness will never steal from you being able to tell it. And even, again, things I reference like El Mariachi and Clerks, they're kind of ugly movies. You know, when you go back and look at like the grainy black and white or 16mm film, with maybe not the most high caliber actors, but there's something about the story that works so well. And in the time that it was brought out, there was nothing like it on the market. But it just really resonated with people. So I'm a story first guy all the time over the technical details. But all that to say, blown away by what the crew that we assembled for last call was able to pull off.
You know, that doesn't surprise me, because remember, and you told me
in the beginning, it was writing those short stories. You know what I mean? Telling those stories. And it's still there, that core. Let me ask you, now, is it, as I understand it, it's coming out next week? Or is it out this weekend?
It's actually, it's in Canada, it's in release right now in cinemas. Here in the U.S., it opens tomorrow, so the 25th.
Tomorrow?
September 25th. Yes, it can be rented through Lemley Theaters. On all of the movie social media, my own social media, I'll be posting the link where people – basically, it's largely virtual cinemas because we're in this pandemic and not that many theaters are open. There is a theater in New Orleans playing it for sure. I think our distributor is working to secure some other actual theaters. Everything's a little slower, a little more weird. Like, lots of theater chains have had to lay off a lot of their staff, so everybody's working overtime and understaffed right now. So it's a strange time. And then it will be available on all VOD platforms like iTunes and Amazon to rent, Amazon Prime to rent, come late October. But yeah, anybody who's listening and wants to check it out, tomorrow's the first day it's publicly available. You know, we did a year-long festival run, and everything's leading up to this public release, and hoping that the movie connects with an audience. And, you know, if people, the best thing, anybody listening, the best thing you can do for an independent film, if you enjoy it, is tell other people about it. We don't have the same budget as the big studios. We don't have, it's the same with indie music. You know, the best way that it grows is grassroots and through people that enjoy it, just telling other people and recommending it. And, you know, it never hurts to tweet about an independent film you like or talk on Facebook about it. All of that goes a really long way. Every individual goes a really long way for the film to find a life.
Helps with that engagement, they call it. There's a guy with a suit at a big desk somewhere. He'll sit down with Gavin and say, well, what's the engagement, Gavin? What's the engagement we're looking at? And Gavin say, hey, it's all over Facebook, man. Everybody's talking about it. You know, and he wins the meeting. There you go. That helps.
Listen, you're,
no, in all seriousness.
You're a cinephile. It's Glengarry Glen Ross all day long. Always be selling. You have to, like, filmmakers do not rarely have the option now that someone else is just going to handle it. You are part and parcel now, a circus ringmaster. You have to become a social media guru to some level, and you have to be willing to ad nauseum tell all of your friends and family how important it is to support the film and share it and make sure that they review it on IMDb and Amazon when it's available. There's no substitute for good hustle in independent film.
That's absolutely in any business. You know, anybody who has. I tell people that
fair
all the
enough.
Time, you know, in my game, I get people, young people, you know, I want to do what you're doing, just sit around and painting. I'm like, well, let me tell you, first off, every day is about a 16 or 17 hour day, and maybe five of that is painting, you know, the rest is working the phone and email. You know, it's
well,
the
you're
same
right. Yeah, you got to run an online store. Like, I mean, but what a world we live in now where I can finish a film and or a music video or anything. I can publish it to YouTube immediately or Vimeo for sale and sort of run my own destiny if I choose to. And same with, I imagine the same with painting, the ability to have an online store and sell prints or the original works. Like, it's a game changer where, you know, it's great if you get displayed in galleries and everything else, but you are a master of your own destiny if you're willing to put in the work and learn the tools that are available to you.
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting because it tells me, since I've been doing this show, one of the things I really dig about doing this show is I get to meet and hang out with people a couple times a week that are just like you, Gavin, that have got that hustle and they get that, you know what I mean? And it's just, I'm inspired by it. I'm like, you know, let's do it, man. Let's make it happen. Gavin not only made a movie, he did it. One take split screen movie. I can do this. You know, I can, not that, but I can paint my little painting. You know, let's knock that out.
You'll have to email me or tweet me a link where I can see your painting. I know nothing of it. You'll have to share that with me.
Absolutely. Well, very cool. Gavin, I know I kept you longer than I was supposed to. I appreciate it. I hope they don't have you stacked with interviews today. If they did, I apologize to the next guy or gal,
No, we're good. We're good. I'm happy to have the conversation.
Well, cool, man. Well, very cool. I can't wait to see more. And you know this already, but I'm going to say it in case nobody's told you this today. Keep doing what you're doing, man, because you're super good at it. You know, this is what you need to be doing. This is, found it.
It never hurts to hear, my friend, and I thank you for that. Little motivation goes a long way. It's a slog in this indie arts world, and all positivity that's sent my way definitely channels into getting the next project off the ground. So I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. And I hope, you know, a parting thought too, I hope you and your family and everybody, all your people and everybody are all, and everybody with, you know, everybody everywhere, I hope safe and secure and in handling the weird world we're in right now.
It is a strange world. We didn't touch on it, but Sarah Booth, who's in the film, is my wife. And she is currently acting in a project. She's actually acting in a project in Toronto. So our world has started to get it's slowly but surely pulling back to normal. And I hope that's a sign of things to come, that, you know, this country as a whole and North America as a whole and the world can finally start to lower these COVID numbers and we can get some sense of normalcy back. I miss movie theaters desperately. Yeah.
me too. It is, you know, I love my house and I love my wife, but we're both talking about that. We're like, because we travel quite a bit and whatnot, and we're like, man, we're jonesing to do something, but you can't right now, you know, you just can't. And it's we want to get back to it, so you know, let's all work together, folks.
The next time we have a conversation about my next film, we're just going to call it now and put it out into the universe that the world will be reopened and we'll be enjoying this face to face. Maybe I'll be in Miami doing a press tour.
Oh yeah,
we'll have to do it over the phone because the world fully recovered from COVID.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think that makes the show right there and my day. Appreciate that. Oh, man. We'll talk to you soon, Gavin. Thank you so much for taking time to be on the show. I really appreciate it. You rock.
Thank you so much for covering our little indie film that could, and it means the world to us that you would take the time to cover Last Call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Glad to do it, man. Glad to do it. I was, like I said, blown away. And ladies and gentlemen, you got to check this out. It's out tomorrow. And, you know, hey, I know you guys all know how to stream now. That's something that we've all learned how to do. I don't think anybody doesn't know how to use Roku now. Man, I should have bought Roku stocks. Anyhow, this will be out tomorrow. Check it out. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media pages and platforms and all that. We're also on all the podcasting platforms. It's like 250 of them. We're on them all. And the big ones, of course, are Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. You'll be able to listen to this episode probably in about an hour. And I know, don't judge last night. That was a weird thing. Today, it'll be an hour. I give you my word. Anyhow, we will see you next time. We are back tomorrow. We've got a fantastic, speaking of indie bands, we've got a fantastic indie band out of Brooklyn that are returning guests will be on tomorrow called Running Lights. They've got a brand new music video that they did shoot in their garage. It's pretty cool, actually. It works out real well. Hey, it's a pandemic. What can I tell you? They're on tomorrow, so check them out. We'll see you then. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.